Okay, this story. I have been a lover of true crime stories for years and years and years, and there's all sorts of like old historic cases that I've known about and been fascinated by, and somehow I had never heard this one.
What?
And then when I started reading it, I was just like, how have I never heard of this one? It's a murder story, and at the time that it happened, which was back in the 20s, it was huge. Okay, so
huge.
This is I don't ever want to quote him again.
No, I know. It's like make
Okay, this is the Witches, Magic, Murder and Mystery podcast.
I'm Kara.
I'm Megan.
Hello.
Hey. Okay, so happy Friday.
Oh my gosh.
I know. I'm so glad. Oh my gosh. Let's see, when is this episode coming out? Because I wonder if
I feel like 3 months from now sounds appropriate.
So this episode is coming out. I have already left for vacation. So I'm speaking to you from the past.
Speaking to you.
Yes.
Megan?
So that means that
didn't you travel
after this week, you're going to start hearing some episodes that are recorded remotely. So
listen, the audio is what it is, okay? Just love us anyways.
I have a family vacation planned. And then my brother has decided that he
just wants to up and go.
And my dad and myself should all go on vacation together. And my mom is going to try to go, but she may not be able to. But I think this will be a blast just to hang with my brother and my dad and my mom, just like when I was a kid.
Please,
I think
take
it'll be really
touristy photos with fanny packs
for
on.
Sure, for sure. I'll
and tall white
pretend
socks.
To be 80s Megan.
Yeah, the long jean shorts with the belt and the tucked in.
I mean,
t-shirt.
Most of those things are coming back.
It really is. Sophie was wearing something the other day, and I was like, "Oh my gosh!"
Like I wore that outfit when I was your age.
Yeah, well, this is weird.
All right, so let's get into this. Crazy murder story.
Historical
murder. And the trials. Crazy. There's so many things about it.
Okay.
All right. So if you're on the Patreon, you heard Kara cover the kidnapping of the Lindbergh baby last month. So that case was hugely covered by the media with nationwide press coverage. Prior to the Lindbergh kidnapping, the only case to come close to that kind of major media coverage in the United States was the Hall Mills murder case.
Okay.
So
like two last names.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
41-year-old Edward Hall was the priest at St. John the Evangelist Episcopal Church in New Brunswick, New Jersey. He had grown up in Brooklyn and moved to New Jersey after completing his degree in theology. And he'd been married to Frances Stevens for about 11 years at the time of the story. Frances was 7 years older than him and the daughter of one of New Brunswick's most prominent families. One of the articles I read said it was no secret that the minister had married for money.
Oh.
The thing is I'm not sure if that happened. Like, did they have that opinion before the murders?
Right, exactly.
So 34-year-old Eleanor Mills attended Edward's church.
Okay.
She sang in the choir there. And her husband, James, was the sexton at the church, which I think means like caretaker or janitor.
Okay.
And they had two children. So apparently it wasn't a very well-kept secret that Edward and Eleanor were having an affair.
Okay.
They apparently had been having an affair for years. Their relationship had been long gossiped about among other members of the church congregation, but nothing was really confirmed until the morning of September 16th, 1922.
Okay.
23-year-old Raymond Schneider and his 15-year-old girlfriend, Pearl, discovered the bodies of Edward and Eleanor posed beneath a crabapple tree on a little dirt road known as a Lover's Lane in New Brunswick.
Oh.
The bodies were laid on their backs. Edward was dressed in a dark gray suit, a white shirt, a white tie, with his Panama hat placed over his face.
Okay.
Eleanor was next to him, wearing a blue dress with red polka dots, black stockings, and brown shoes.
Okay.
Her legs are crossed. Her left hand is on Edward's knee. His arm is, like, outstretched, and she's kind of laying on his arm.
Okay.
The hem of her dress was pulled down as far as it would go, and a brown scarf lay across her throat. You can see crime scene photos if you Google it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple that seem to be, like, a remake, like a dramatization of them. The real ones will be the ones that have the Panama hat.
Over his face.
Okay. They were posed to look like they're just laying under the tree taking
enjoying
a nap.
Yeah.
It was obvious to Raymond and Pearl that Edward and Eleanor were dead.
Okay.
They ran to the nearest home and phoned the police, and officers arrived quickly. It took no time to identify Edward. His business card was there, propped up against his shoe. Huh? So they, whoever did this, wanted it to be known.
Okay.
And if that wasn't enough, there were love letters torn up and scattered on the ground around the dead couple.
What?
Mm-hmm. So, in one, Eleanor had written, "I have the greatest of all blessings, a noble man's deep, true, eternal love. How impatient I am. I want to look up into your dear face for hours as you touch my body close."
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to read one more excerpt.
Oh, okay. Man.
Edward had written, "Darling Wonderheart."
She's a Care Bear now.
Sorry, Edward, but come on.
Wonderheart. Care Bear.
"I just want to crush you for 2 hours.
Crush you?
Mm-hmm. "I want to see you Friday night alone by our road, where we can let out, unrestrained, that universe of joy and happiness we call ours." I don't know. I guess, I think in the 1920s, people just spoke more flowery in general than we do now.
Yeah.
I mean, this is best, way better than like like a you up text or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I don't know. But there are other...
But intimate... I want to crush you for 2 hours.
Yeah. I get it, but I also don't get it. Right?
Yeah.
He's going to be on top of her for 2 hours.
Right.
It's oddly specific amount of time, too. He could have just said hours. I just want to crush you.
Right.
If I say I just want to crush you, that sounds like a threat.
Right. Don't tell me how long it's going to be, because that's also a threat.
Wow.
2 hours.
I got so many
grocery lists I've made.
Okay. There are other intimate details in the letters, more that we would make jokes about, but I just don't want to. Like, I just feel like I know that what they were doing was wrong.
Right.
But they were brutally murdered.
Right,
I'll get to those details in a minute. And I just feel sorry for them.
Right.
So if you want to know more about what's in the letters, you can Google it. Even in the sources in my show notes here, they had a lot more excerpts, but you can also just Google Hall Mills murder love letters and you'll find a lot of it. It's a lot of that. It's a lot that you're like, I mean, I was a little bit like impressed by how, I don't know, dirty they were. And
right.
They're not very dirty, right?
Right.
But by 1920 standards, it's like, oh my, wow.
Ooh.
Yeah. Okay. So
you put this out there.
That is hot. Okay.
Ooh.
Like I mentioned, Edward and Eleanor had been posed to appear like they were resting peacefully, but autopsies revealed the violent nature of
their deaths. Oh, geez. So from the outside, it didn't look like anything had happened to them.
I guess until you got close. And that is the other thing.
Okay. They just saw them.
Yes.
Okay.
In the crime scene photos that I saw, you don't get a big up close. It's more that you're looking at it and you know, like, oh, this is them.
Mm.
Like, this is awful.
Yeah.
Okay. So Edward had died from a single bullet to the head fired at point blank range into his right temple.
Oh my God. Okay.
He had some abrasions and marks on his knuckles that made it look like he had been fighting for his life at the time. Eleanor had been shot 3 times in the head.
Oh.
Once about 2 inches above her nose, once through the right cheek, and the last one through her right temple.
Oh my gosh.
Eleanor's throat had also been cut, completely severing her jugular vein, windpipe, esophagus, and neck muscles. The article said her backbone could easily be seen.
Oh.
And her tongue and larynx had been cut out.
Oh my God, that's brutal.
Right.
Ugh.
So let's just keep in mind, number one, Eleanor got a lot more violence and mutilation. And we'll come back to that. So they could tell from the insect activity that the deaths had occurred at least 24 hours before the bodies
were discovered. Could they tell who died first?
No.
Okay.
If they could, they didn't mention it here.
Right.
The crime scene was compromised pretty quickly. There was like a whole jurisdictional thing where the murder happened on the border of 2 counties. Mm-hmm. So, of course, they're like, we don't know who's in charge. And while they're sorting that out, people heard about the murders and came out and just like walked all over the crime scene, took souvenirs.
I was going to say they probably were taken.
Passed Edward's business card around and just generally passed physical evidence. They said the media went so crazy over this story that the scene where the bodies were found became a major tourist attraction.
It's like Pearl Bryan said.
Yes. On weekends, they said the crime scene became a virtual carnival.
Oh my God.
Vendors were selling popcorn.
What?
Peanuts, soft drinks, balloons. Balloons.
Huh?
I mean, Eleanor had children.
Right.
And they were like, the morbidly curious arrived at the rate of 1,000 cars a day.
Oh my gosh.
Within a few weeks, the crabapple tree had been completely stripped of every branch and bit of bark by ghoulish souvenir hunters. While one enterprising individual peddled samples of the dirt surrounding the tree for 25 cents a bag.
What?
I just don't understand. Like, here's this. My great-great-great-grandma had this piece of bark from a tree where these people died.
From a tree where these people died. No, I mean, it just was all over the news, and so she just wanted to pass it down to us.
Who cares? Why do you want a piece of tree? Why? Why do you want dirt? I just don't. To me, the fact that Edward got one single shot to the side of his head, but Eleanor had multiple shots.
Right.
Disfigured her face. Right. She was mutilated. Cut out her tongue. Right. It seems like they had a particular vendetta against
her. Right. That's why I asked if we knew who died first, because maybe she did and he was like fighting for her.
And he had to watch.
Or, yeah, exactly.
Edward's wife, Frances Stevens, became a suspect pretty quickly. Right. Obviously. She had brothers, one of whom was known as being an excellent shot.
Oh, amazing.
As well as a cousin who could have all been involved. But the investigation didn't really go anywhere until a woman named Jane Gibson, who would become known as the Pig Woman because she was a hog farmer. Like, just call her freaking name. But all the headlines are like, Pig Woman. It makes her sound like
looks like a pig.
Right. Why do you... She's a pig farmer. Call her farmer.
The farmer.
Or Jane Gibson.
Yeah, exactly.
Why do you have to be like Pig Woman?
Can we just use her name?
She came forward saying she'd heard a noise the night of September 14th, and she saw someone in her field. She jumps on the mule and rode after the person, and she comes upon a parked car. There, she overheard an argument between two men and two women, and one of those women had white hair, like Frances Stevens.
Oh.
According to Gibson, a woman's voice yelled, "Explain these letters!" And this was followed by gunshots, shrieks, and a woman screaming, "Henry!"
Oh.
This scared Miss Gibson, and she quickly returned home.
Oh.
So police did their investigation, and a grand jury was finally convened in November. They listened to evidence for 5 days, and they declined to indict anyone.
What?
At that point, Frances set sail for Europe.
Of course.
And that's where it all might have ended until.
Oh, there's an until. Okay.
Okay. A petition falls into the hands of Philip Payne, who is the editor for the New York Daily Mirror. This petition had been filed by a man named Arthur Real.
Sure.
And it was a petition for an annulment from his wife, Louise Geist.
Okay.
Arthur was seeking an annulment because his wife had told him a secret, and he was so disgusted by it that he just wanted the marriage to be over.
Oh.
Louise Geist had once been a maid in Edward and Frances's home. Okay. And when she worked there, she had learned that Edward was planning to elope with Eleanor, and that Frances had taken off after the minister with her brothers and her cousin on the night that Edward and Eleanor were murdered. Louise had been paid $5,000 to keep quiet. So basically, she was just being paid to keep their whereabouts
a hush
secret.
Money.
Now, remember, this case had been a media sensation 4 years earlier.
Yeah.
And now Philip Payne has brand new evidence, and he sees it as a way to send the Daily Mirror right to the top of the tabloids.
Ooh.
So the Daily Mirror was only 2 years old at this time, so it wasn't even around when the original murder. Yeah. It's not so much about solving the crime as it is about, you know.
Yeah. Getting those numbers up.
They want to have a scoop like this because it'll really get some attention for the paper.
Yeah.
Because remember, the news is a business.
Because that algorithm.
The media wants you to give them money.
Right.
So they tell the stories. They get the money. Uh-huh. And sometimes they tell the stories in a way that is going to make you give them your money by reading it and talking about it and clicking on it. PSA. Okay.
Yep.
The front page headline of the Daily Mirror on July 17th, 1926 read, "Real facts of the mystery to be bared by mirror." And suddenly, the Hall Mills murders were all over the news again.
Fun.
Throughout the following days, there were more headlines. Hall's bribery revealed. Mrs. Hall's spies held town in terror. How Hidden Hand balked Hall murder justice. I'm really glad that headlines aren't like this. You know.
I was going to say, huh?
Some like that last one's like hard for me to even.
Yeah, understand. Like what? Why is it so long?
Good.
Who came up with this?
The renewed attention in the case did indeed increase the Daily Mirror circulation. So of congratulations, Philip Payne. Mm-hmm. And it also led the governor, it basically forced the governor to reopen the investigation.
Which is what happens a lot of times now. Mm-hmm.
On January 28th, 1926, Frances Stevens Hall, her brothers Willie and Henry, mm-hmm. and her cousin Henry Carpenter were all arrested for the murders of Edward Hall and Eleanor Mills.
Okay.
This trial.
Okay.
When the trial began on November 3rd, 1926, the media called it the trial of the century.
Oh.
And you might think, remember how I said at the beginning that...
It was all for money.
Yeah. Well, Frances belonged to this, like, wealthy family.
Right.
And so they're all kind of like, they have this high social status. All the defendants do. Her cousin, Henry Carpenter, like that was a really prominent name. They said they even think that she was related to like the Johnsons of Johnson & Johnson.
Oh, okay.
Money. So I'm sure that's all part of it. But like, wait till I tell you some of the things that happened in this trial.
Okay.
The prosecution's star witness was Jane Gibson, the pig lady. Remember?
Oh, sweet little Jane. Okay.
So at this point, it's 4 years later, she's very sick with cancer.
Oh, no.
But the prosecutor was like, you have to testify. You're all I've got. She's the eyewitness, right? She's really the only one that can connect
those dots. Okay.
To the place because of the white hair.
Yeah.
All right. By the way, for this trial, Henry, the cousin, Henry Carpenter, he'd actually asked to be tried separately from Frances and her brothers. So he's not on trial at this time. He's scheduled later. So this trial, I'm only talking about Frances and her two brothers. So you can just ask to be
tried differently.
Apparently. Okay, so Jane Gibson's testimony is one of the more sensational parts of this trial. She's dying of cancer.
Right.
She's carried into the courtroom on a stretcher, placed on an iron hospital bed facing the jury box with a doctor and two nurses by her side so she can testify.
What?
I took the picture just so you could see it. I'm going to put it on our Instagram.
Look at that. She's lying there. She's not even sitting up. She's in a hospital gown, in a hospital bed, lying there in the middle of all these people.
I guess there was no way to do any kind of video or remote testimony.
Right. So they had to literally wheel her in. Also, hospital beds were a lot bigger back
then.
This
picture is insane. Every time I look at it, I'm just like,
it literally looks like we are in...
They're all just standing around her. She looks...
The Capitol. Like she's dying of cancer.
Yeah.
People and just her in the middle of them.
Okay. Wow. So this poor woman is dying of cancer. She's laying there in the courtroom. She testifies that she and her son lived in an old barn that had been converted into a living space. So she's like the original hipster. Uh-huh. And her dog started barking around 9 p.m. She goes outside, sees the man in her cornfield, hops on her mule to go toward him. And that's when she sees four people standing near a crabapple tree. She heard gunshots. And a figure fell to the ground. A woman screamed, "Don't," three times. So if we believe her version of events, it would seem that
he was killed first.
He was killed first. Right. And that woman screaming, "Don't," would have to be
Eleanor.
At that point, Jane turns her mule around to get out of there. And she looks back when she hears more gunshots and she sees a second figure fall to the ground. She also testifies that she heard a woman shout, "Henry." Okay. Remember, Henry is the name of one of Frances' brothers. It's also the name of the cousin. My theory is that I don't know this, but I feel like the cousin they may think had more peripheral involvement, and that's why he was able to be tried separately, but I'm not sure. The defense portrayed Jane Gibson as uneducated and crazy, and it didn't help that, like, her account of what happened that night varied as well.
Well, she's sick.
Yeah. She told certain details to the police, certain details to the newspaper, and now certain details on trial. On top of all of that, Jane's own mother sat in the front row of the gallery in the courtroom, wringing her hands and muttering, "She's a liar, she's a liar, she's a liar," the whole time that Jane was testifying.
What?
She's a liar, she's a liar.
She's a liar.
Like, if I wrote that in the book, my editor would be like, "Megan, stop being ridiculous. It's too much."
Yeah.
And that's just one wild event during this 23-day trial.
So everybody heard mom.
Right. So it didn't help. Remember the love letters that were scattered around the body? The court clerk had to read them aloud. And of course, excerpts from the letters were splashed all across the newspapers, which is how you can read them.
Of course.
Eleanor and Edward had been involved in an incredibly passionate affair. Through the letters, we learned Edward and Eleanor compared their romance to prayer, and they exchanged notes. Now, hang on a second, because I just remembered that I pulled up this thing. When I was researching this case, I honestly didn't see a whole lot about it all focuses on Francis.
Right.
And, you know, Eleanor was also married.
Yeah.
This newspaper article says falsehood found in murder probe. Okay.
Oh.
And this is because when they went to question Francis, but also when they questioned James, who was Eleanor's husband, their stories contradicted. This is from October 5th. There were indications that the murderer of Edward and Eleanor would be soon be under arrest, possibly within 48 hours. So they're putting out this article before anyone's even been arrested.
Okay.
And they didn't know who, but they knew it would be somebody.
Okay.
But the prosecutor said witnesses so far have been untruthful and certain stories coming from the Hall and Mills homes are fabrications of lies. It said that James Mills, husband of the singer, which was Eleanor,
right,
today contradicted a statement attributed to him that he had only seen Mrs. Hall, which is Frances, right, Edward's wife, once on the day after the murder, and now claims to have seen her four times.
Oh.
He was visibly annoyed by the receipt today of an anonymous warning to tell all. So this is the only thing I saw that gave any sort of hint that there might be some sort of connection between James and Francis. Like, did he know? And what did he know?
Right, exactly.
And then it also talked about, this is what reminded me about it when I was telling you the story. So one of these articles said that they passed notes back and forth through a hymnal.
Right.
But this newspaper article, that's not what it says.
Okay.
It says that they figured out.
You mean the media changing information?
What? I believe this because this is like from when it happened.
Right, exactly.
So it says, authorities investigating the double murder today claim to have discovered the secret post office used by the couple in exchanging love notes.
Mm.
It was an old packing box in the cellar of the church of St. John the Evangelist.
Oh.
The cellar is little used. And 2 weeks ago, James W. Mills, who,
right,
remember he was the sexton of the church and he's Eleanor's husband,
claimed
to have the only key to it. And he said he went there only to tend the furnace. There's a trap door to the left of the altar that opens into the cellar, but there are no stairs, and the only entrance is from the outside through a door below the window of the pastor's study.
Mm.
So, again, if James is the only one with the key, I just wonder.
Did he run and tell Francis?
Right. Did he find them?
Yeah, and show them to her, and she had them in her possession? Because how would she have gotten them if they were,
right,
in the church?
Right. It's interesting.
Even if he did see her once that day, it was to pass off those letters.
Maybe. Well, this was after the murder.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But still, he could have met with her to talk about what happened.
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe he didn't know about it before,
right,
it happened. Maybe he didn't know until after. Either way, it's really interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
So in these notes, in the public reading during the trial, this is also where we learn that it was Eleanor's singing that had initially entranced the minister.
Okay. It's like when we sing to all of you all and you just...
And you just instantly fall.
That's why you can't stop listening to us, because you just keep hoping that we're going to sing something.
I have to read this part because I can't leave it out.
Okay.
I was going to leave it out because, you know, how earlier I was like, I don't want to like...
Yeah.
Laugh too hard. But this is... Okay, I'm going to read this directly from one of the articles, and all the sources are in my show notes, as
Amazing.
Always. And they got all this from the letters, okay? When Reverend Hall wrote sermons in his study at St. John the Evangelist in New Brunswick, he could hear the soprano's voice drifting above the others into the rafters. There was some, quote, something divine about the way she sang hymns, he thought. As she climbed octaves, the Holy Spirit came over him, and then the words poured from his pen.
Did that article do that on purpose?
It was just like,
what's climbing and what's pouring.
That's got to be on purpose. There's no way they did that by accident, right? Come on. I mean, if not, it's just like one, that's what she said after another.
Exactly.
All right. So knowing that he fell in love with her after hearing her sing makes it even more awful that Eleanor's murderer had slashed her throat and removed her tongue and her larynx after death. Don't you think? Like, it seems like there has to be some kind of connection there.
Mm-hmm.
The prosecution's case stated that Francis had instigated the murder and that her brother Henry had fired the actual shots.
Okay.
Henry testified that he'd been fishing miles away at the time of the murder.
Of course he
was. And there were three witnesses who corroborated his testimony.
Okay.
The other brother, Willie, owned a .32 caliber pistol like the one used in the murder. So the prosecutor said he provided the weapon. And his fingerprint was also found on Edward's business card. They've been left at the scene. But remember how that was passed around?
So right, exactly.
They can't even hardly depend much on that. The jury deliberated for 5 hours before finding the defendants not guilty.
Huh? Mm.
Henry Carpenter, the cousin who was supposed to go on trial later,
right?
Never goes to trial.
Because they were like, meh, they're not guilty, it's fine.
Frances Hall sued the Daily Mirror for defamation, and this was settled out of court.
Of course.
The thing about the Daily Mirror's coverage is, so, you know, I told you this was like a media sensation.
Right, exactly.
The New York Times covered it, and they typically didn't cover that kind of thing, at least not
at that time.
Right. Yeah. To the extent that this was. They apparently had 4 reporters who were just like in the courtroom full time every day.
Oh.
But they gave a more balanced representation of the trial, whereas okay. the Daily Mirror really was like all out saying in like it. Frances did.
Yes.
Yeah. So one of the articles I read, an article in Contingent Magazine by Audrey Farley, made some really interesting points about how this murder and trial took place in an interesting religious context. I mean, obviously, it's a minister having an affair
right.
with a choir singer.
Right.
But more than that, in the 20s, there were all these theological debates going on about fundamentalism versus modernism in American Protestantism. It's a lot of isms.
Isms. That's what I was going to say. Huh.
Basically, the fundamentalists felt like America's falling apart due to immigration, anti-capitalist sentiment.
It's the 20s. What else would you think?
And women's rejection of Victorian prudishness, among other things. And the only way to save America was to uphold the fundamentals of faith.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side, modernists were more optimistic about where America was heading. Oh. They talked about immigration reforms, access to birth control, women's voting rights, and divorce law.
Mm-hmm.
This was the 1920s.
Yeah.
It's like we just haven't stopped fighting over the same things.
No, it's we're constantly in the 20s.
And we solve problems by solving the wrong problems.
Exactly.
It's exhausting.
Yeah, it really is.
Here's the thing I read in this article that I didn't read anywhere else. We know from their love letters and other evidence from the trial that Edward and Eleanor had obviously been paying attention to the theological debates going on at the time.
Okay.
On the day that she died, Eleanor had placed an editorial in Edward's desk in which Minister Percy Stickney Grant, here's a direct quote, he argued that the Episcopal Church should revise its rule prohibiting divorce except in cases of infidelity. Grant reasoned that a marriage's sacredness did not come from a priest, but from those involved. A union was blessed by their feeling and behavior. Hence, a marriage without two truly committed souls did not honor the Lord, and there was no reason for it to continue.
Hmm.
This rationale surely appealed to the lovers who had not shared a bedroom with their respective spouses for years.
Right.
Mill's daughter reported that her parents had a loveless marriage and that her father verbally abused her mother. And local reporters observed that Mrs. Hall spent most of her time with a lady companion with whom she later moved to Europe.
Hmm.
Basically, the Hall-Mills murders just became another topic in this big theological debate.
Yeah, of course.
It was like a national media sensation. Yeah. And Americans were fairly divided on what outcome they even wanted to see. But like suddenly, for the fundamentalists, they were like, look, they had an affair, so they deserve what happened to them.
Right, exactly.
So do you take a more fundamentalist approach and say the only people to blame here are Edward and Eleanor because they'd engaged in sinful behavior, made even worse by the fact that Edward was a minister?
Right.
So we know from their letters that Edward and Eleanor seem to think that their love glorified God rather than turned him away from them.
Mm-hmm.
And the fundamentalist view was that sex was for reproduction.
Of course.
And that's the only reason we should do it.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, the whole thing is pretty shameful.
Right. You shouldn't feel good about it at all.
On the other side, modernists are more like, what matters most here is Christ's love. Here's another quote from that article. There are many who believe that redemption is only possible for those who strictly obey biblical law, and many who believe, quite contrarily, that redemption is possible for all who embrace Christ's persona of love. You're about to get a Megan rant.
I love it. I can't wait.
I think I've talked before about how my own complicated feelings about organized religion, but I don't have complicated feelings about God.
Right.
There are people, I think because of the title of this podcast or the nature of this podcast or just interactions with me, they don't get, like, I do believe in God.
Right.
I think humans are the problem because humans use God against each other.
Oh, they've
weaponized him in a way that is ridiculous.
Yeah.
They use what's supposed to be like the most incredibly loving being in existence to divide us and gain power over each other, which is like so not the point.
Exactly.
Sometimes, particularly over the last few years, I have to remind myself that the God we hear about most on the news, that's the God that people create to, like,
just cover up their own issues.
Right. They pull him out of their pocket and they tap his name whenever they want to place themselves above other people.
Right.
But their God is not my God.
Yeah.
And the things they do in the name of their God can't make me doubt mine. So with whatever is happening in the world and in the news.
Exactly.
That's something that I think about all the time. You know, it pops in my head all the time. Because there will be times when I will be so frustrated and I'll be angry with Christians when I also identify as a Christian. And then I have to think, but these aren't.
Right.
These aren't my people.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway.
These are people that are just using a name to.
Yeah. They're not. This isn't what God would want. Mm-hmm. God doesn't want to be weaponized. That is not what it's about. And if you're a Christian who just loves pulling out your Bible so you can point out what everybody else is doing wrong, you're doing it wrong.
Exactly.
And you are doing nothing to help anybody.
Right.
Okay. So anyway, if religious stuff interests you too, I highly recommend that article. And there's a link to it in the show notes. Mm-hmm. Okay. The murders of Edward Hall and Eleanor Mills remain officially unsolved.
That's so wild to me.
I know. I mean, in my opinion, the defendants in the trial got away with murder.
Right.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
I think the fact that they had such high social standing and connection to other prominent families.
For sure.
Just made it really difficult for a jury to convict them.
Yeah.
Because we have this thing about how, like, we have a hard time thinking fancy people can commit murder. I mean, how in the world did O.J. Simpson go free?
I was barely just about to say that.
Yeah. And so I think that couldn't have hurt anything.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Hall Mills murders.
Damn.
Can I even believe? I've never heard of it.
Have you? No. I've never heard of that.
The pig lady testimony is still to thank.
I cannot believe. Like, they literally had her in a hospital bed in the middle of the courtroom. Mm-hmm.
And it was such a salacious story. Like, it's not hard to see why it was a media sensation.
Yeah.
But it was like, gosh. Huh? Okay. That's it. That's the story. Thank you guys for listening.
We love you so much.
If you all have any stories you want to send in, please do. You can find all the info for how to do that in the show notes.
Yep.
You have anything else you want to say?
I don't think so.
No? Okay. We love you
so much.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.